Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 139, recorded on October 5th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going great. And based on the tone of your voice, it sounds like it's going well for you, too.
It's going pretty well. I just suddenly took on the persona of a radio broadcaster. So, had the deviated septum. That's how they do it, right? They, if you really want to make it in radio, you got to break your nose. So, I'm thinking about it. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent.
Yeah, I think you just told Jeff that.
I did. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, we're professionals.
Oh my God, this show's
fantastic. Everybody has fun on the show. Right? We're having fun talking about the iPhone.
How long before people realize we've all had a stroke?
I mean, ideally, they've already realized that, and that's why they're tuning in. So
it's sympathy listening.
Yeah, something like that. I wouldn't call it sympathy. I would call it entertainment. But so something happened yesterday. Something pretty significant happened.
You got kissed?
No.
Oh.
Unfortunately,
awkward.
Awkward.
Yeah. Oops.
That's the new ingredients for a joke: is set up and then nothing and then awkward. Apple had an event at their campus about the iPhone, as we talked about last week, and of course
in their living room.
Yeah, at the town hall.
In their living room.
Well, isn't that what Tim said? It's sort of like, you know, in their house.
Yeah, inviting
everybody
them
came
in.
Over. They just had some few friends over. Talk about some stuff.
Yeah, that's a fun way to put it. Of course, Tim Cook, the new CEO, this is his first time leading a product announcement keynote, which he did point out, and I think he did a pretty good job. I would say he was maybe lower energy than Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well, he also has his own style.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have your own style. And I was fine with that. The only thing that I would have changed if I was mapping out that presentation would have been to take like the first 45 minutes, condense it down to 5, and call it good.
Yeah, but I think that's what generally happens at every single Apple keynote. If they've gotten a bunch of press together to talk about something, they're a captive audience, why not just push as much of their agenda down their throats as possible?
Oh, sure. And as part of the Apple thing.
Totally.
Excuse me. It was just the first part felt a little too slow.
Yeah, it's a little warm-up spot to get it going.
That's putting it nicely, Jeff.
I'm trying to be nice.
A little too slow, I guess.
Because, okay, here's the deal. The first 45 minutes of the presentation, I'm pretty sure my eyes were bleeding by the time we got to cards, and I was saying things like, please, God, let me die.
You know what I was very happy about, though? That they only had one third-party app demo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Because it could have been an hour and a half instead of 40 minutes. That's always my favorite part of past keynotes. Mm-hmm. And another third-party app developer. Yay.
Yeah. So,
and I love third-party app developers. Don't get me wrong. I really do. Just not in the middle of Apple keynotes when I'm waiting to find out what the deal on the next iPhone is.
Sure. So anyway, the first thing that they talked about was this new cards application. So you can send iPhoto style greeting cards right from your iPhone or iOS device, which I guess is pretty cool. I've only ever sent one postcard in my life.
Now you can send more.
Yeah, definitely.
Did the U.S. Post Office come to Apple and say, look,
we need you.
We know the iPhone and the iPad are really hot, and we are in desperate trouble. Can you do anything to help us make more money? They went, cards.
Wait a second. These are real cards?
Yes, yes. They're actual printed cards that get mailed.
Holy cow. Holy cow. I did not realize that. I thought they were virtual cards.
No.
There you go. I was
maybe if they hadn't killed everyone's alpha brainwaves leading up to that announcement, there would have been more people that realized, take a photo, turn it into a physical postcard. All you have to do is do the photo, add the address, and you're done.
Now, that's pretty neat.
Yep. That's why the app is free, but it's, what, $2.99 to mail in the U.S. and $4.99 if you're going international.
That's a lot.
Right.
So that's probably around the cost for a postcard and mailing it, right?
Well, a custom printed one. You got to remember, they actually have to print it.
Yeah, custom printed postcard.
There's like paper and ink and stuff involved.
Gotcha. I'm not too familiar with this paper and ink stuff.
Yeah, one-off printing. So it's basically like the iPhoto thing, except you don't have to order a whole like batch of cards. You can literally order one and have it physically mailed to an end recipient. And then it even has the whole little push notification thing.
Oh, to let you know when it's
shipped.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and when the person gets it, apparently, too.
Ah, and how much they like it, and then when they put it in the trash? You get push notifications for that, too?
I guess so.
So you know not to send them a postcard again.
Only send it to your grandma. She'll save it forever.
Moms will love this app.
Yeah, moms and grandmas. So, iOS 5, they talked about iOS 5, of course, at this event. I believe
ten
features that we already heard about, except for one of them, which was the Find My Friends. So there's now, we talked about it, I think, at least on this show, but it certainly was rumored because we found some strings in the previous, the beta builds referring to Find My Friends. And basically, it's a little location collaboration application.
Yeah, it's called Stalky.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the way that it works is you can say, hey, share my location with this certain group of people. I believe you can request the location of someone.
Really? So like I'll get a little notification. It's like Michael wants to know where you are.
And you're going to be getting that very soon. Yeah. Both of you.
Now my little pet name for it's even more appropriate.
Yeah, Stalky. Exactly. Yeah.
I've been calling it Find My Ex.
Hey-o. There's also a temporary sharing option, which I think is really cool. So if you're at some sort of event, say Macworld or what was it, Mac Computer Expo that just happened?
Yeah. That would have been really great.
Yeah, it would have been really great. So then you could figure out where Jeff and Adam are and Gene and whoever else was out there. If they share their location with you, there are privacy controls and features for parents as well. So if you want to know where your kids are, you can set it up on their phone with a password and they can't turn it off.
Here's a funny
thing. If I was a parent, I would totally use that and I would know where my kids were every moment of the day. I'm thinking about buying Nightshade an iPhone just so I can track her like that.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, we had a similar system. It was called, my parents said, if you go anywhere, you need to tell us where you're going. And if you go anyplace else, you need to call us and tell us where you're going. And if you aren't where you say you are, then you don't get to go out of the house.
Yeah.
It worked. It didn't even need GPS.
Yeah, and actually it worked pretty well.
Yeah, it definitely affords kids way fewer opportunities to get in trouble, which I'm in support of kids getting into trouble.
I'm in support of kids getting in trouble as long as I'm not responsible for them. Now, considering I'm not responsible for any, you know, this is all very easy for me to say.
Yes. So,
okay, kids. So we got to tell the kids how to get around this, right? So go sign up for a Google Voice number, get a burner pay-as-you-go phone from 7-Eleven,
and
forward
your
calls from your iPhone to your burner phone and leave your iPhone at your friend's house where you said you were going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then take off.
There
so
you
then you're good.
This
for
is why,
future reference. Save this
is why the parents love this podcast.
Adam, you are brilliant.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, you know, nothing really ever beats just trust.
I totally agree.
What I'm really trying to say.
Definitely agree. So, in addition, iOS 5, they announced the official release date, which is October 12th. The Gold Master has gone out for developers already. And I've played with it very little. It's basically the way it's been in the betas, except I'm guessing less buggy. But that's good. We actually have a real date for that. Apple, I don't think they mentioned anything about it during the keynote, but I thought this was really cool. They introduced a new product called AppleCare Plus, which is, I believe it's only for the iPhone.
Correct.
And it allows you to, it gives you the standard AppleCare 2 years of phone and technical support. You can take it into the Genius if there's a hardware failure. You get it swapped out, no problem, or repaired wherever necessary.
And how much does it cost you?
It's free. Now,
wait.
If you have accidental damage, and that's the plus part of this, you have accidental damage, such as dropping it and breaking it, or dropping into the toilet and drowning it, you have 2 incidents of accidental damage that are covered. So for $50, they'll swap out your phone, no problem. Which is very cool.
Mm-hmm. Although I can see where there will be some customers that will be pissed off thinking, wait, I have to pay more for my AppleCare, and now Apple's going to charge me $50 to swap out a phone that I was stupid enough to break. Right now, I can go into the Apple store, and if I'm nice, there's a good chance they'll just give me a new one.
That does happen very often. So standard
but
AppleCare...
people have this misguided sense of entitlement, so that probably... Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Don't be a jerk to the Genius. They're there to help you. But it's $70 for the standard AppleCare protection plan for the iPhone, so it's $100 for AppleCare Plus. Now, if you're not covered, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're not covered and you go in there with a broken screen, for example, it's $200 and they'll swap it out for you, right?
$150 or $200, I can't remember.
I think it's $200.
Okay.
Or if
I think
it's
that's only a one-time thing, right? I think it's $199 and once. And if it happens a second time, I don't think they do that.
Well, if it's a second time, then they take your phone away from you and say you're not allowed to have one anymore.
Yeah, and they give you a rocker.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great.
They got a whole surplus of those in the back.
We got a bin full of them.
Now, when you've learned your lesson, we'll give you your iPhone back.
Right.
Now I have a dilemma on this, though. And I'm going to ask you guys about this because I've always been of the mind that I get AppleCare on my notebooks and on my Macs, but I've never purchased AppleCare for an iPad or an iPhone. And here's my thinking on this. So I've had iPhones since the original iPhone. I've never had to put them in on AppleCare. I also get new iPhones every couple years, depending on how Apple releases them. So they're usually covered by the original AppleCare. You know, my iPhone 4 hasn't been. But then also on the damage side of things, and knock on wood, I'm going to say this, and now I'm going to drop my iPhone tomorrow. I've never had accidental damage on any of my my iPhones. So when I start costing it out that way, it seems more cost beneficial for me not to have AppleCare and pay this extra money up front, especially if I did have accidental damage even now, they'd swap it out for what we said, just said $200. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I've gone through years of iPhones not paying that extra money. So net, I come out ahead, right?
Oh, yeah. Me too. I've never bought AppleCare for my iPhone or iPad. And I've certainly had to have them swapped out for various reasons. None of them were...
But were
seemingly
they under the original
accidental.
AppleCare or outside the original AppleCare?
They were the original AppleCare.
Because you get a year out of the box. So
right.
The AppleCare adds another year. Plus now the accidental damage if you get the plus.
Right, yeah.
Now, my iPhone 4 is the first iPhone that I've bought AppleCare for. And I bought it because I knew that I was going to have this phone beyond the 1-year warranty. And my Jedi instinct said, you know, this is the time you better buy it. And I haven't needed it yet, but I've got my AppleCare.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So, I don't know. That's where that's where I've always fallen on AppleCare for the iPhone. But, you know, I know people who have purchased it and been glad they purchased it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're freaks like us and get a new iPhone every year, then
it doesn't make any sense.
But again, you can buy it, you know, you have up to that first year to buy it anyway. So, Jeff, I'm assuming, did you buy it right up front, or did you buy it like right before, like when you realized Apple wasn't bringing out an iPhone in June and you were going to go past your year?
I waited, until I think it was about 3 days before my AppleCare expired, which would have been after the traditional launch window, and then went ahead and bought it.
Yeah. The only weird thing about that is you have to really stay on top of when your AppleCare is up. And the way I do that is just, you know, set an iCal reminder the day you buy your device and just
there,
you know, for a week before and have it remind you, hey, you might want to buy AppleCare now.
Yep, that's exactly what I did with my MacBook.
Yeah. See, I make it more complicated. I set my reminder date for the actual date it will expire, and then set an iCal alarm to go off a week early.
Oh, I thought you went into your phone and you figured out how many in minutes, how many days it would be, and then you set a timer, a really, really long timer.
Oh, that would be awesome. Brilliant.
Yeah.
I can see someone actually doing that.
That's a pro tip. So,
is that what we're calling it these days?
Uh-huh. Okay. iCloud is coming out October 12th, along with iOS 5, which makes sense. iTunes Match will be at the end of October. And now the interesting thing about it is, have you guys watched the keynote yet? Because they mentioned on several occasions that it will provide streaming.
Yes, they did a reversal on their language. I still may have technical issues with them saying it's streaming.
Yeah, they say that.
I don't think it's really streaming. I think Apple's just using the word.
Right, and because it just seems like it is, because essentially what you're doing is you don't
have... No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't stream?
I don't think so.
Well,
progressive downloads never feel like streams to me.
Well,
to
no,
me,
it's
streams
not
is like Pandora, and I push the button and it starts playing.
Well,
as opposed to some sort of weird buffering thing that happens.
I think the weird buffering thing feels just like streaming, and maybe streaming is not as good. I think the way
doesn't when you're transitioning from one track to another, and there's a 15-second pause.
Well, supposedly,
again,
and they didn't really. Yeah,
comparing my progressive download listening experiences to something like Pandora.
They didn't really cover it too much, but what they did say is it's streaming, and they cache your most oft listened to songs, and I'm guessing they probably might even do some extra magic where they would start buffering the next song as well.
Yeah, again, we'll see.
Yeah,
you know, we can take them at their word. I'm saying right now I don't
It's interesting, you know, I just want to see how they determine what your more often listened to songs are.
Exactly.
It'll be fun. And I'm really excited for this for this new...
By fun, you mean extremely frustrating when it doesn't work the way they told us it would work.
Well, certainly less frustrating than the thing that I use currently, which is ZumoCast. And that's it works. It gets the job done sometimes, but sometimes it just says, nope, you don't have any music. Sorry. Go away.
Is that a real streaming thing, or are they doing the same kind of HTTP progressive streaming thing?
It's,
you know,
I'm how would I know? I'm not sure. It doesn't cache it. I mean, no, I think it does do it. I think it's basically what iTunes Match does, but not as nice.
Cool.
Because sometimes,
well, we'll know soon.
So I start playing a song and it plays it through, and then it goes to the next one, and then the third song it says, oh wait, your entire your computer's off. You can only play those two songs that you just played. Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Match isn't till the end of the month, right?
Right.
You're saying end of October?
Yes. But I will be getting on that. I'm excited for that.
Match. And it has a 25,000, is it, or 250? It has. There's a limit, right, to the number of songs?
There is, yeah. Jeff, I'm guessing you don't know off the top of your head.
I want to say it's 25,000 songs, I think.
But yeah,
it's, which might frustrate people. Frustrate some people who have very, very large.
But that is
libraries.
That's only matched. Well, Yeah, it says 25,000 songs, based on this random Google search that I did.
Yeah. So if your library is bigger than that, and you're planning on using Match, you probably don't want to buy it.
Well, yeah. So the Match only works for music. Match is stuff that you haven't purchased from iTunes. So if you have, regardless of whether or not iTunes has it in their database, it's still a Match song, whether or not it's having to upload the song or just matching it. But it looks like I will be okay. I only have 8,700 songs.
25,000 songs is a big, big library.
That is a really big
library. I think I only have about 4,000 in my library.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. $25 for a year.
Checking now.
That's a really good deal. I'm looking forward to it.
It's 25 a year.
Yes. Right. Yep. Now, I wonder, do you know if the for stuff that you upload, that doesn't count toward your iCloud storage, does it? That's just kind of rolled into whatever Match. Match has its own separate storage for stuff like that.
Right? Now you're going to put my feet to the fire. There's a set of services that are like PhotoStream doesn't count against your storage.
Right.
Music you purchased from iTunes does not count against your storage.
Right.
But that's not.
I have 8,398 songs.
Well, the Match, once you match it, right, you have that forever because you can download it. And it will actually upgrade
your storage because you didn't buy it.
No, that doesn't make any sense because if music that you bought from iTunes does not count toward the cloud to the iCloud, then anything that you've upgraded with iTunes Match will also not count because you're suddenly you've matched it and you can download it to your computer and upgrade anything that you have there that has matched. So the only thing that would make sense that it would count toward your storage with is the stuff that doesn't exist in iTunes. And I haven't really heard anything about that. So I guess we'll just have to see. So yeah,
the stuff that isn't in iTunes that you upload, there is a limit on what you can have there. But that is, from what I understand, accounted for independently of the rest of the storage space you have.
On iCloud.
Yeah, and that's part of what you're paying for.
Right, that makes sense. So it's not limited in terms of size. It's limited in terms of number of songs. Is that correct?
I think so.
Because I have some like 2 hour long, I have a bunch of 2 hour long like mixes and stuff like that, that I know iTunes doesn't have and I would like to have available. So that would kind of destroy my storage space if there was a limit on that. But I'm guessing they probably just ignore that. And I think that the limit of 25,000 songs is probably just so that people don't go download a whole bunch of really crappy quality music and then say, hey, I'm going to upgrade all this music. And, you know, now I have a bunch of music for only $25 that's really high quality. I think it's probably just for that sort of thing.
Probably. And I can see where the record labels in their
you need some kind of
myopic, draconian world would want to restrict people as much as they possibly could.
Right. Okay, so the first kind of new thing that was announced, well, I guess they announced new Nanos, right?
We already talked about the cards, so that was the first new thing.
Nano was the first new thing?
No, cards.
Oh, yeah,
Nano was the first. No, cards was the first new thing, then Stock My Friends,
yep.
And then the Nano.
So they still have the Shuffle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Still have the Shuffle. They got
correct.
Newer Nano. I believe they tweaked the interface.
Yes.
It doesn't require a Nike dongle to track your running or walking or what have you. It and new clock faces, right?
If you have the Nike little shoe insert thing, Did that mm-hmm. only track like time and stuff? I never had one, so it didn't do like a GPS thing.
No, it was pedometer only. Oh.
It tracks time and distance from a pedometer standpoint, but no GPS tracking.
Right.
Okay.
So this basically just
like
has
the iPhone app does the GPS thing, right?
No. Right. No. The built-in iPhone app does not do GPS. The one that you get from the App Store, the Nike...
The App Store, that's what I'm talking
the,
about.
The actual Nike Plus GPS is the one that has GPS. And okay, I cool. definitely yeah, prefer I'm that. Just,
that's
but,
cool.
But there's a pedometer in the Nano.
Always has been.
The clock faces, I really like the clock faces thing. Apple does not provide the wristband, correct?
Apple not has yet. Never provided a wristband.
yet.
I'm assuming that the wristband they'll make will perfectly match the iPod cozies that they've been selling. Or excuse me, they call those socks, don't they?
Right. Yeah. But I really like these socks. I like these watch faces. They're a lot of these are really cool. The ones with
Do they have images of all of them up?
Well, they have quite a few of them. If you go to the iPod Nano features page and jump on down to the clock faces spot, you can switch between a bunch of different ones. There's some really classy looking ones. There are really sweet looking digital ones, and you got Mickey Mouse and Minnie and Kermit the Frog and Monster and just tons of other stuff. It's really cool. I like that. I like that they did that. Now, they embraced that whole thing.
Have you noticed if you go to Apple's iPod Nano webpage, the Mickey Mouse clock face
he ticks.
Is actually showing the exact time.
Oh, it's showing the egg. Oh, I didn't see that. Hang on.
Yeah, the second hand is turning, and it's a very slick thing. So, you know, when you see something like that and people say, CSS3, HTML5, it's way too limited to do stuff. You still need to have Flash for really cool effects on your website. Show them this and tell them to suck it.
Yeah, those people are smoking crack. Yeah, this is really cool. I like this.
Yep.
The iPod Classic has not gone away as we thought it would. So that's nice.
Yes, some people thought it would.
Mm-hmm. Some people. You're not including yourself in that, I'm guessing.
I am not included in that group.
Okay. New iPod Touch. As far as I know, nothing new except for the fact that it comes in white now. And is a little cheaper. Correct?
Well, and it's only the bottom of the line model that's cheaper, right? The 8 gig.
Right.
Yeah, the 8 gig is now $200. It used to be $230. The white one looks very nice. But they haven't upgraded the internals or anything, right?
No. Not as far as I know.
All right. Well, then there you go. So, what else do we have here?
Did we mention that the Nano is purely a software update, and that if you have an existing Nano, you can get the software update and get all these features?
Oh, cool! I did not know that. And it doesn't look like that Apple has any of their own wristbands, but they do sell a bunch of them in the Apple Store. So, the main event, the big thing, iPhone 4S was announced, available October 14th. You can pre-order beginning October 7th, it'll be available 8 a.m. in Apple retail stores on the 14th in white and black, and at capacities of 16, 32, and 64 gigabytes. 16 is $200, 32 is $300, and 64 is $400. AT&T, Sprint, and Verizon. So Sprint is coming into the fold. Now, Sprint won't be available immediately, right? Is that correct?
I thought they were supposed to be available immediately.
I heard somewhere that it wouldn't be immediately available on Sprint for some reason. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, now here's a problem, because Sprint is doing a complete crap job of advertising the fact that they will have the iPhone. The last time I looked at their page this morning, there was no information, no indication anywhere they were carrying the iPhone.
Well, that's no good.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to pull it up here. So, yeah, Sprint coming soon. So if you look at the page in the store for the iPhone 4S, it's AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint coming soon. And like you said, Jeff, there's nothing about the iPhone 4S on Sprint's website. However,
there you go.
They did confirm that they will be offering unlimited data for iPhone. So it'll be $69.99. You'll get unlimited data and 450 minutes for voice, as well as unlimited mobile-to-mobile calling. Not entirely sure about text or night and weekend minutes, but who knows? Have you guys heard about that?
About what? Can you tell how excited I am that Verizon has the iPhone?
I mean Sprint.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Very excited by that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they have it, and well, it's good for customers, and now there's more choice, and that's great.
Certainly, and it also provides unlimited data. There's an unlimited data option for now for people.
AT&T did it, Verizon did it, and then they took it away, and Sprint will take it away too.
I hope not. But that is definitely a possibility, so if you want unlimited data, I would get it as soon as you can. So, will it be available in other retail stores, or is it just Apple stores?
If Apple follows the same pattern that they have used for previous iPhone models, then yes, but maybe not immediately.
Okay. Well, yeah, certainly yes, eventually, I think, but who knows about...
Yeah, and if you take into account the rumors that were popping up ahead of the announcement, that retailers like Best Buy and Radio Shack were putting placeholder items into their product databases for future iPhones, that potentially could be an indicator that they will have them too.
Gotcha. So, let's see here. Let's talk about some features, shall we? So, the iPhone 4S looks just like the iPhone 4. It is a world mode phone, so it does GSM and CDMA, so there's only going to be one flavor, so you don't have to worry about whether the updates are out for your iPhone 4S or the CDMA one or what have you. I believe it by default comes with a SIM card tray, right? Have we confirmed that?
That it comes with what?
With a SIM card tray, even if you get it on Verizon or Sprint.
If there's only a single phone, then yes, you would still have the SIM card tray.
Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing is,
otherwise, it defeats the whole purpose.
Well, I don't know if it defeats the purpose at all, because they talk about how it's a world phone, but at the same time, they kept saying, yeah, you can... If you have a CDMA service, you can roam on GSM outside the country. And to me, that means you're not going to be able to stick a GSM SIM card in there. You're just going to be roaming.
All right. So when I say it defeats the purpose, what I mean is it defeats the purpose of Apple being able to offer a single phone everywhere. And then they're back to where they are today, where they have to have custom phones for different carriers and different markets.
Right.
Hey, Michael, there's one thing I wanted to bring up, because I just saw this on Cult of Mac. They noted some stuff about the unlocked iPhone, and it may be relevant here also, that it's looking like if you have an unlocked phone, it's only going to work on
GSM
carriers, not CDMA carriers. And it looks like they have a screenshot. I'm assuming this is from Apple's website, and it says that you need a micro SIM card if you're going to be using a GSM on a worldwide carrier. So that seems to indicate that there would be a micro SIM that needs to pop in there.
Interesting. So even if you're roaming on GSM service, is what you're saying, and you have a CDMA iPhone, or you're using CDMA service,
if you have the CDMA iPhone were in, you know, say it's unlocked and you want to take it to some carrier worldwide, you have to use GSM and you have to get a GSM SIM.
Right.
So, you know, it arrives without a micro SIM card. You need an active micro SIM and from a supported GSM world carrier worldwide to like make it work.
Yeah, that makes sense. But what I'm talking about is, I don't think that if you get the standard locked iPhone, even though it has a SIM card spot, if you mm-hmm. purchase the service through Verizon, you're simply going to be roaming when you're out of the country. So you're still going to be using Verizon service.
Correct. You need the unlocked version of the phone. That's always been the case, though.
No. But you're allowed to, as you are now, if you're on AT&T, you leave the country, you go to Europe, you're still on AT&T service, and you're going to be charged like crazy for roaming out of the country.
Right.
So it's going to be that same situation. It's just like now if you have Verizon by default, even if you leave the country, you can still do that. It's not that you can pop another SIM card in there when you leave the country and use something over there.
You can if you have an unlocked phone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you buy a subsidized phone.
Oh, interesting.
Which I'm assuming will still be locked to a carrier, even though it has CDMA and GSM, you'll be exactly in the position you are today.
Correct. Except that you'll actually have service if you had Verizon service in the past, because you'll be using GSM. You'll just be using the GSM antenna. You won't be using a GSM carrier. Well, you will be, but you won't be. You know, you guys know what I mean.
You'll be world roaming.
Yes, and it sucks. Don't do that. But, okay, so in addition to that, the antenna has been updated. So as we talked about before, the iPhone 4S looks exactly the same as the CDMA version of the iPhone in that the antenna configuration, at least externally, is identical. And part of that is because they redesigned the cellular antenna. So they have dual antennas now, which switch dynamically based on how you hold it or based on what gets better signal. So you won't have the death grip as much now. So it won't be as easy to selectively get rid of calls by saying, oh, I'm going through a bridge. I'm going under a bridge. I don't know. And you hold it and then.
I'm driving in a Faraday cage.
So they didn't fix the problem that they didn't have, but it's got better antennas.
They fixed the problem they didn't have.
No, you didn't get my joke.
No, I got the joke.
I thought the joke was excellent.
Okay, I'm sorry. So, you know, they were talking about how it dynamically switches between transmit and receive. I'm not sure. There's nothing crazy going on. It's basically, it'll switch the antennas as you're on the phone. Now, there was some speculation that this may solve the issue with CDMA service where you can't receive data while you're on a call. Have you guys heard anything about that?
I was wondering
There's
about that.
There's no way to address the CDMA thing.
Even with double antennas.
I didn't think it was possible.
Right. That is a technical limitation of CDMA.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's what I figured. It's funny because I thought about that at first and then I thought, well, wait, that probably doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But when they say, you know, one can, because they said something about one being able to receive a call and one being able to send a call.
Yeah.
Something weird like that.
I think that's just weird.
Which is what I think threw everybody off.
I think it's just weird language. I'm not sure. I don't think one antenna is going to be sending the voice and one antenna is going to be receiving the voice, because I'm not sure that really makes any sense. I think you just want to use one antenna based on which is working better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
but I can see why people would have thought that, you know, it enabled the...
I mean, I guess you can think whatever you want. It just...
Yeah. Well, those antennas have nothing to do with the data anyway. So it's just, I think like Jeff was saying, it's how the data is carried along with voice over the network.
Yeah. So in addition to the new antenna, of course, the new iPhone 4S has a dual core A5 chip, just like the iPad 2, although we haven't gotten any word on the amount of RAM. There was speculation that it might have an entire gigabyte of RAM. And of course, we won't know that until... they actually get into our hands and the guys at iFixit tear it apart.
Well, and we didn't get a clock speed either, right?
No clock speed.
I mean, we're
either.
Assuming it's the same A5, but.
Right. Now, what's the iPad 2 clock speed? Is that a gigahertz?
I believe it's a gigahertz, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So they say they're claiming twice as fast for CPU operations and 7 times faster for graphics performance. Battery life, you get an extra hour on 3G talk time. 2G talk time is the same. And actually, interestingly enough, you get 100 hours less standby time on the iPhone 4S than you do on the iPhone 4. Did you guys see that? It's 200
hours. I wonder if that's because of the new notifications stuff on the home screen.
No, because that's on the iPhone 4 as well. So it's 300 on the iPhone 4, 200 on the iPhone 4S. And that's from Apple, comparing the different ones.
Wait, you're saying the iPhone 4 went down also?
No. I'm saying the iPhone 4S is 100 hours less in terms of standby time than the iPhone 4.
The current iPhone 4.
Right.
You're comparing the current iPhone 4 to the iPhone 4S. The iPhone 4S is going to be running iOS 5. The current specs on the iPhone 4 would be estimated off of iOS 4.
You could make that assumption, but I'm basing these are just numbers from Apple's site comparing, and I'm guessing they're not going to suddenly update their comparison when iOS 5 comes out. I'm guessing this
is because
based,
the software is a factor. I know that's how they're getting the extra hour.
But they didn't specify, and I'll look back at the comparisons, because if I look at it and it says something about iOS 5 features on the iPhone 4, then one could assume that it's comparing apples to apples, or iPhone 4S and 4 on iOS 5, as opposed to having it different. But that is
why would it be different then?
Who knows? Different processor, I'm guessing.
It's in standby. What should the processor be doing?
Well, good question.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why my theory was maybe it was because, you know, if the new operating system's getting, I mean, there's something happening on the new OS when it's kind of in standby, right? Because it can still be, it still has to fire up to get push stuff.
Sure.
And there's more push stuff. So I don't know. That was why that was my theory.
But you do get more talk time for what it's worth. Now, back to the processor, however, I don't think they really lit a lot of press play with these new phones. However, the folks who did get to play with it, I believe Engadget and a couple other places got to play with it for a very short period of time. They say very zippy, very nice, and almost instantaneous page loads in Safari, and it just bops between applications, and the camera especially opens just immediately. So I'm pretty excited about that. Much faster iPhones, always nicer.
Oh, yes.
Of course, better camera now, so it's 8 megapixels as opposed to the 5. They updated the optics, so now there's a fifth lens element, which, Jeff, do you want to explain why that's good?
Better optics means higher quality images, potentially, because you'll get less distortion, and you have the potential to have better focus.
Because you have an extra element? Is that because of the extra element, or?
From what I understand.
Okay.
And then when you couple that with the new CMOS sensor that they're using, which can sense a substantially higher number of photons, meaning it's more sensitive to light.
Yeah.
When you mix the higher quality optics plus that sensor, plus they have the f2.4?
Yep, the aperture is a little bit wider, so it's 2.4 as opposed to the 2.8.
Right, and so you put all those things together, and you're going to get much better images.
Yeah, they say much better color uniformity and throughout the photo, and just better crispness in it. They say it's much faster, too. They showed some photos of things that are pretty hard to get photos of due to them moving, such as waves crashing on a rock, squirrels,
Which apparently are difficult to get to stand still.
I'd imagine they are. I've never taken a photo of a squirrel that close. So, and I also noticed, they have an IR filter now. So it'll be better at filtering IR. For whatever that'll do. It also has face detection, which is cool. And I believe that's part of the A5 processor. Video is now 1080p as opposed to the 720p, and it also has video stabilization, which is very nice. I took some video of the Space Shuttle Atlantis pulling into the garage after it landed, and the video is really cool. You know, I basically taped it going in for about 5 minutes, so you know, from completely outside to all the way inside. It was a really neat video. Unfortunately, a little bit of it was kind of shaky because of the, I'm guessing, the rolling shutter issue and just me holding it. So this, based on the stuff that they've shown us, the examples that they've shown us, it should really improve that.
Yeah, that'll be nice. Now, okay, so if you really cut down the shakiness in the camera, and then you import the video into iMovie and let it do its image stabilization, you'll lose a lot less of your image.
Yeah, I'm getting, well, which would be cool. Now, it's hard to say, because yeah, it does use hardware in that it uses the gyroscope and the CPU to kind of offset it, but it's not moving the lens elements. It's still correcting it in software. So if it is 1080p video, it's definitely less resolution. Maybe if you do have that on.
Oh, right. So if it's doing it the same way iMovie does, right, then it's going to be, by definition, you'll end up with a cropped video.
Right. So that makes me wonder if there will be an option to turn that on or off.
I bet there will be.
Yeah. But it's still good. I mean, at the very least, you're probably going to get 720p, which still is stellar.
So, oh, yeah.
So that's really exciting. So we've got a lot more to talk about, especially that super-duper awesome feature that we haven't really discussed, which I'm sure everybody knows about already. But before we get to that, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, which is Gazelle at gazelle.com. Now, we've been talking about Gazelle for the last couple of weeks and saying, hey, there's a new iPhone probably coming out. You might want to sell your stuff to get some cash so you can buy it. Gazelle is the perfect way to do that. And of course, now we know what the new iPhone is, the iPhone 4S. If you want to get one, you have an old phone, maybe you have an iPhone 4, maybe you have an older iPhone, maybe you have some other phone. Maybe you just have some digital cameras or other electronic stuff that you want to get rid of. You want to get some cash for it so you can put that toward your new iPhone. Gazelle.com is the way to do that. So here's how it works. Go to gazelle.com. On the front page, there's a little search box, and you type in there, you type in iPhone 4, for example, and it asks you a couple questions about what kind of iPhone you have, AT&T, Verizon, color, size, the condition of the phone. And then after it asks you all those questions, you obviously want to answer them as truthfully as possible, because they're giving you an estimate based on that. So then they'll tell you how much they'll buy your iPhone from you for, and they'll send you, well, shipping to Gazelle is free. They'll send you a shipping label, or I guess print it. You can print it yourself. And in a lot of cases, they'll even send you a box, which is really great. So you don't have to worry about printing or anything. They'll send you a box. You put it in there, send it off to Gazelle, and they'll check it out. And if it matches your description, they will send you the amount they told you they'd send you in the form of a check or PayPal. You can even get it in an Amazon gift card. And if you do it that way, you get 5% extra on top of that. So that's really cool. Or you can donate it to charity, if you would like to do that. Maybe if you're not looking to upgrade your phone, you just want to get rid of some electronic stuff, you can do that. And even if you have some older stuff that they're not even going to pay you for, they'll help you recycle it. So anything that's of value, they'll do free shipping for you. If not, you can ship it off to them and they'll recycle it for you, which is very nice. Of course, these guys have been around since 2006, and they've done over 200,000. They've had over 200,000 customers. They're sensitive to the fact that you have data on these devices. You know, an iPhone's a pretty personal device. You don't want it to, end up in the wrong hands with all your personal data on there. So, or a computer or what have you, because they take all types of electronics. Of course, you want to wipe it before you send it off, but they will go ahead and wipe it themselves to make sure that all of your data is properly erased from there before it's resold or recycled. So, you know, if you're planning to get an iPhone 4S, you want to get some extra money, get rid of some gadgets or an old phone that you have, check out Gazelle.com. And, you know, just try it. There's no risk to typing in the stuff that you have and seeing how much they'll pay you for it, because you really have to send it off to them before the process actually gets underway. So just check it out. See how much they'll give you. Gazelle.com. And we thank them for sponsoring We Have Communicators. Now with that, let's talk about Siri, my favorite feature on the new iPhone 4S. So Siri, it's interesting that they're even calling it Siri, but it's the voice control system that they now have with the iPhone 4S.
I think it's a great...
We're saying the same thing. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I just think it's a great name, and they just rolled with it because there was really no reason to change it. It's now got a little personality. I mean, it's become, instead of a brand name, it's now, you know, the thing in your iPhone, the assistant in your iPhone is just named Siri.
Yeah. And then if you ask it who is this, it'll say, I am but a humble servant or something like that, which I think is neat. But so it's the new voice control in the iPhone 4S only. Of course, the name comes from Siri, the company that they purchased last year that did essentially the same thing. But if you don't know what it is already, it's voice control that actually works. And do they claim that it's actual AI? Because it certainly seems like
it. I think it is.
Because you say something like, will it rain in San Francisco this weekend? And it goes out, it checks the weather for you and tells you whether it's going to rain or what temperature it is. It brings up forecasts. It sets reminders for you. You can send text messages with it. It'll read text messages to you. You can set up appointments. You can have it play music for you. It just does just tons of crazy awesome stuff.
Okay, so here's the thing I think a lot of people are not getting. They're looking at Siri and they're thinking, ooh, cool voice recognition. That's fun. That's not what this is. Voice recognition is just the tip of the iceberg because it has to recognize what people are saying so it can parse that information and create results. It's the underlying part that's the big thing. The comparisons that I'm sure people are making just across the board about Siri and Star Trek, where you just have natural language to interact with the computer, that's pretty much what this is.
Yeah.
And so you can give naturally spoken phrases, and it parses that out and intelligently returns some kind of response. And with the voice control that you have in the iPhone 4 today and in most other smartphones, you have to phrase what you're saying in very specific ways so that it can listen for phonemes is the term, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's listening for the specific speech patterns to match to its database. So it's like right now when you say, call Jeff, the first thing it has to do is recognize call. So now it knows what commands to use. And then from that part, then there's a little other magic that's going on. But it's relatively limited compared to what Siri can do.
Right.
I mean, Siri is you saying, set an appointment with Michael at noon on Wednesday, and Siri comes back and says, you already have an appointment with Adam. Do you want that at a different time, or do you want me to double schedule it? And you say, oh, make Adam's appointment or make Michael's appointment at 3:00.
I mean, you don't even have to say that. It understands contextually where you are within the conversation. So you don't say, oh, well, make that appointment with Michael, yada, yada, yada. You just say, move it to
make
two.
Make it 3.
Yeah, exactly. Or you could say.
Or move Adam to 3.
Yeah. Or any of those ways. That's the other cool thing about it is it's not really based on predetermined ways of interacting with it. You can just say whatever you want. You can say, should I bring an umbrella today? And it'll figure that out. Here, let me play this video. It's a short video on the page.
It's amazing.
Read me the message.
New message from Sebastian. Great news. We got the go-ahead. Can you meet at 10?
Reply, definitely. I'll see you there.
This is a guy out running.
Play my running mix.
What's the traffic like around here?
Here's the traffic.
Text my wife. I'm going to be 30 minutes late.
Is it going to be chilly in San Francisco this weekend?
Not too cold. Maybe down to 61 degrees in San Francisco.
What about Napa Valley?
Doesn't
and there's
seem
the contextual
like it.
Stuff.
How many cups are in 12 ounces?
Let me think. Okay, here you go.
He goes out
set
to Wolf
my timer
from
for
Alpha.
30 minutes.
Okay, 30 minutes and counting. New notification from messages. Sandy Chen, are we still on for dinner tonight?
Reply. Sure, I'll be there.
Here's your reply to Sandy Chen. Sure, I'll be there.
This is what I've been waiting for in computers my whole life.
It's the Knowledge Navigator, right?
Yeah, this is the Knowledge Navigator. They ditched the bow tie and gave us a
lady,
a woman's voice instead of the guy. And yeah,
I kind of wanted.
Steve has to just cringe every time anybody makes that comparison.
So. But I'm sure he does. However, it's completely appropriate because what they're doing with iPhone 4S and Siri is what they were envisioning with Knowledge Navigator. That one of the big differences is that now, instead of having an iPad sitting in front of you doing that, you can put it in your pocket. Of course, imagine when iPad 3 comes out and it has Siri built in, and I'm speculating, of course, and
sure.
Then people are going to go in and CG the Knowledge Navigator video with an iPad.
Yeah, it's just Knowledge Navigator was a Scully thing, so it's just like...
Right. Now, this only works on the iPhone 4S, not on the iPhone 4 or the other ones, and not on the iPad 2.
Correct.
Which, the iPad 2 is the one that's going to be the real rub, in my opinion.
I agree.
If they don't bring it out as an update for the iPad 2...
Oh, I hope they do.
Well... then if they try and not bring it out and say there's some sort of hardware limitation, then I don't understand what that is, because it has the same processor, presumably. Well, we don't know if that has the same amount of RAM, but, you know, it's the same processor at the very least. So
okay, what if there's a custom Siri chip? And I'm calling it a Siri chip just right. For sake of argument. If there's that custom chip that's necessary for all this and it's not an iPad 2, all right, then we have a legitimate limitation to the device.
Right.
But if it's just that the software isn't on iPad 2, oh, Apple, give it to us, please.
Yeah, and Michael, so you were asking about the artificial intelligence thing. I had come across something, and I just pulled up Wikipedia to kind of verify and get some of the information right. But the Siri company is SRI International, which is it's an artificial intelligence company. So that's definitely where it has its sort of roots from. And SRI International actually is Stanford Research Institute. And it's just a big research company that was backed or I guess formed by the trustees of Stanford University like in 1946 or something like that. So, I mean, this is cool technology coming out of that area.
Sweet.
Yeah, but definitely all based on artificial intelligence.
Yeah. So you can so it has dictation. Of course it has the control. It also has speech to text. And now that is that through Nuance? Did we get any confirmation on that? It definitely requires an internet connection.
Well, that's what the Siri app used, so I would assume.
Oh, it also used Nuance.
It was. And I'm guessing that Apple paid Nuance like just a ton of licensing money so that they didn't have to say what the technology was, and they probably never will.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me that it's Nuance behind the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Scenes.
And of course, it'll read stuff to you, which is great. It's beta right now, which is interesting. Apple doesn't usually come out with something very and say this beta. Is beta. Yeah, but it is a very good beta. Again, well, people who played on this, played with this, said that they tried to screw with it and it worked every time.
Well, have you used just the Siri app that's on the iPhone now?
No, I tried to. It didn't work.
So, well, okay, so I
mean, yesterday it didn't work.
You tried it yesterday?
Yeah, the server was down.
I played around with it again, once again. Oh, just for server, maybe server reasons. Well, I had not used it in a while. So I used it when it first came out and kind of thought, oh, this is neat and cool and gimmicky. And I think I didn't really get it. And I know there's probably been some software updates since then. So I opened it back up and tried it again, just messing around with it, doing real natural language, the contextual things. And it did, you know, a really pretty good job on my device. And the thing that, so it's cool in and of itself, but I think the thing that puts it over the top with Apple doing it now is it has to have the integration with all the built-in services that are on the phone. That was the problem with Siri before. You were kind of sandboxed into, right. You know, just inside the app. So, you know, it couldn't go out and read a text or even reply to a text. It couldn't go out and interact with my calendar. Well, it might have been able to do that, but, you know, through the APIs. But it would have been much more difficult since it's not baked into the operating system, right? So, I mean, yeah, I'm totally excited about Siri.
Oh yeah, me too.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, I think the beta moniker is Apple's way of getting around if it's kind of a little funky at first and not as seamless as they're advertising, I think gives them a little bit of leeway.
Sure.
To kind of finesse it.
Mm-hmm.
I think language was also another reason. You know, they did point out it's English, French, and German at launch, but they're planning on rolling in other languages. And I think they said something specifically about it being beta. And related to the languages.
Yeah. So, let me think here. The iPhone 4 is still available. It's also available on Sprint, or will be available on Sprint. Right? Does that mean that there's only going to be one flavor of the iPhone 4 as well, or have you heard anything about that? Anybody?
Good question.
Yeah, it is a good question.
Well, I think it's just the same CDMA one that's on. Where did I see that? So I saw when you hit buy or how to buy. Oh, is Apple still having its?
Apple's definitely having some server issues because it's going slow.
Is it still the DNS thing?
The access denied deal.
I thought they cleared that up.
I think they fixed that. Yeah.
Okay. The DNS poisoning.
Yeah, iPhone 4. Sprint coming soon. So, not entirely sure if it's going to be one model or two. I'm guessing they'll... maybe. We'll see. Who knows? But it is available for $100 at 8 gigabytes. You can't get it in any higher capacity. You can also get the iPhone 3GS still in 8 gigabytes, and that's $0 with a contract. Which is very nice. I would say that's probably the best way to handle that, having a free iPhone. Yeah. Oh, another interesting thing. Apple is now offering to buy back iPhones. Do you guys see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it? Up to $200 back.
Yeah, up to $200. I think they might have offered me. It certainly wasn't $200.
I got a $140 offer for my 32 gig iPhone 4 with minor scratches.
Yeah, I think that's what it said for me. And honestly, I went to check out gazelle.com and they were offering more. But it is nice that Apple's doing it. And I don't know what so apple.com/recycling, I believe, is the URL to pull that up.
Do we talk about the eligibility thing for iPhone 4 owners?
Yes, that's what I wanted to talk about. That is what I wanted to talk about. I couldn't remember. So, yeah, you want to bring the details to that?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I bought an iPhone 4 on day one, and so I was curious, you know, can I upgrade and when can I upgrade? And it's looking like they're adding a month to my upgrade eligibility, which is fine, because AT&T, typically, it's 20 months before you can upgrade. So that would put me at 17 months for a discounted upgrade, which is really earlier than most people, you know, with their sort of, what do they call it, their customer loyalty program, get to upgrade. But I'm not eligible to upgrade at the subsidized price on launch day. And I guess some iPhone 4 owners are getting upset about that, or there's been some hubbub on Twitter and online. And I think that's just...
Well, of course there's a hubbub.
You know, you sign a... It's a two-year agreement, and they're letting you in at 17 months. So I think that's still a good deal.
Certainly.
You know, you're not going to be able to get your iPhone on launch day if you don't want to have to pay the full price. But, you know, a month to wait. And I have to wonder if they're doing that just to keep supplies in good order, you know, to sort of stagger things out. But I don't know. And, of course, new customers are much more valuable, at least initially, I think, to AT&T or to any one of the carriers than existing customers upgrading.
Definitely. So,
you know, it's that whole acquisition thing. So
for people who purchased their iPhone 4 back when it was first announced, like you're talking about, Adam, mm-hmm. it seems like November 25th is when you can get it for the standard subsidized price. If you get it before November 25th, it's going to be $450 for the 16 gig, $550 for the 32, and $650 for the 64. And of course, you can bring up the eligibility stuff.
Yeah, it adds $250 to the price if you don't have it subsidized.
Right.
Fully subsidized.
Yeah. So now I purchased my iPhone in October last year, so it's even more. But like I said, if you go to the Apple store.
Oh, do you still qualify though in November?
No, I don't.
So yours is pushed out even further.
Yeah, let me pull it up again.
Okay. So that said, I have a question for you because I know you've done this before and somebody asked me about this.
Some squirrely getting around it?
Huh?
Some getting around it?
No. So I have two iPhones. My wife has an iPhone. She has my old 3GS that she got when I upgraded to my iPhone 4. Mm-hmm. And so her contract is now offset from mine. Her 2-year upgrade time is offset from mine. So my plan was to get to upgrade her phone to a new iPhone 4S fully subsidized on launch day. And then I was going to give her my iPhone 4 and I was going to get the iPhone 4S. So the question was, how do you do that transfer? Is it as simple as just I pop the SIM card out of hers after I take her phone on launch day? That's the one that we upgrade, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, when I do the pre-order, I use her number, I do the upgrade. So go launch day, pick up the phone. I put my SIM in that phone, her SIM in my iPhone 4, and we're good to go. Is that all that needs to happen?
Yes, that's how it should work.
That's exactly. I've done that in the past. I did it with the 3GS. I gave my mother my 3G and upgraded her to the 3G, and I kept the 3GS. So I just traded the SIM cards. You shouldn't even have any issues with micro SIM versus regular SIM because they're both going to be micro SIM.
Right.
Correct.
Yep. So
that was, it was just the question is it literally that simple? I think that's even how we did the transfer before.
Yeah.
So,
that's how I plan to do it.
That,
That's how I plan to do it. Because
what I was going to say is I had a coworker who tried to do that with her boyfriend, and they tried to do it in store and have the numbers moved around and stuff like that, and they totally screwed it up.
Oh,
and
I
like
bet.
Both phones were like dead for a day until they got it all sorted out. So.
Yeah, I would try to
avoid. They didn't
avoid.
Just do the SIM swap thing. They tried to do some fancy thing in the system to move things around, and it got all messed up. So
yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, trade in SIM cards should be the easiest way to go. So
that's
yeah,
what I thought.
I think that's all we're going to talk about today. We've talked about a lot. It's a pretty long episode. We have our iPhone picks, though. You guys ready? You got a pick, Jeff?
I do. Hold on, I'm opening my phone because I can't remember what it's called.
Okay,
I have one.
All right, you go.
You want me to go first?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was prepping for MCE, I started to look more at some of the note-taking apps that I had. And specifically, I had an app for sort of taking handwritten notes, Pen Ultimate, which I like. It's fine. Does a pretty good job. But one of my complaints has always been sort of that it's hard to take like a whole page of notes. So if you were taking handwritten notes like you would on a typical notebook, in that application, you kind of end up writing bigger and kind of using up more pages, which is not a big deal because you have virtual pages, but it kind of just makes for, you know, you don't get a lot of notes on a single page. So I thought, you know, I wonder if there's some creative apps that can handle sort of doing a zoomed writing area or just handle writing better. And so in my research, I found this great app called Note Shelf. Are you familiar with this? Have you guys come across this yet?
Mm-mm.
So it does a couple great things that some of the other note-taking apps that I've played around with don't. So when you launch the app, it looks like a bookshelf a la iBooks. And then you can add a notebook, and you can add multiple notebooks. And what's cool is the notebooks all have different types of paper. So you can do legal pad, you can do checkered paper, you can do wide rules, narrow rules. And then on top of that, you can pick different covers. And so they have all kinds of different cover styles, leather and basic, and sort of set up different notebooks for different things that you might want to take notes for, and then give each one kind of its own custom cover. You can also then group notebooks on your shelf, and it'll put a little, you know, tag underneath, so you can put all your personal notebooks, all your office notebooks. If you're taking classes, you could put all your course notebooks in sort of one little set. And so then you can drill into that set, so that almost acts like a folder. And then this thing's just loaded with great features. So then when you're taking notes, the thing that I was looking for is, you of course have the standard things where you have all different kinds of colored pens that you can make. You have highlighting, you have eraser, you can put in photos like media. You can take pictures and insert those. They even have little kind of stickers and stamps to like call out things. But the big feature that I was looking for is they have a zoomed in feature. So you press this little zoom button and you get this little box, and you can kind of define the area that you see down in the little zoomed palette that comes up at the bottom. And then you can write in the zoomed area so that you can write smaller. So if you want to have a real narrow ruled notebook, you can write big down at the bottom, and then it'll show up in that same area at the top. And it has some nice controls where as you get over to the right side, it'll automatically scroll over so you can continue to write, and then it has a little quick return button. So when you get to the end of the line, you hit return, and you just work in this little zoomed area, and it allows you to take much finer notes. And you can control the zoom factor and the line positioning and stuff like that. So it has that. It also has wrist protection. And the wrist protection is really smart, too. It gives you a little slider on the right-hand side so that you have an area at the bottom where you can rest your wrist right on the screen, and it won't recognize that as a touch. And then you can write. But as you're writing down the page, it also is smart enough to move that wrist protection area down automatically as you're writing.
Neat.
So, yeah, it's just a really, really slick little app. And then you can manage your notes. You can, you know, move pages around. You can export them, do all those other kinds of standard things. But what I really liked about it mostly was the fact that it has the zoomed in writing feature, the wrist protection, and then just the organizing and sort of this shelf motif that's becoming familiar for a lot of book note kind of apps on the iPad. So it's called Note Shelf, and I want to say it was $4.99.
It is. It's $5.
Yeah. So good deal.
For the iPad only, right?
For the iPad only.
Yes. Jeff, what is your pick this week?
All right, so my pick came out of looking for new apps that would be useful when I went to Mac Computer Expo. And what I was looking for specifically was something that was going to make it easier for me to find the different things I'm looking for when I'm doing my flights. And so I found this application called Gate Guru, and it's free. And what it does is it lists all the airports, and I don't know if it's worldwide or just for the United States. So it lists all the airports. It gives you maps of the airports. It lists out all the different concourses that the airports have, and it tells you wait times for TSA. It tells you what services are available throughout the airport. So you can figure out what restaurants are available in the concourse you're in, what stores are there, what other services are available. And it's just a surprisingly handy little application.
And it's free.
And it's free.
Wow. I'm definitely going to bookmark that application.
Yeah. And depending on what airport you're at, there might be like discounts and other specials at different stores and restaurants that are in the concourse you're in. So it'll show you what deals are going on too. So that's kind of cool.
Awesome. It's a Gate Guru, one word, and it's free. Okay. So my pick this week is a hardware pick. It is the Jaybird Freedom Bluetooth headset. And it is, I've played with a lot of Bluetooth headsets. My favorite one up until this point was actually another pair from Jaybird. That was an over-the-head earmuff style headphone, which I generally prefer in-ear headphones, but I definitely enjoyed it because it just worked really well. Now, the JF3, the Freedom headset, is an in-ear Bluetooth headset. The wire goes behind your neck, and it's built specifically for exercising, for running and doing that kind of thing that would most likely jiggle the earphones out of your ears. And so to combat that, they have two different solutions. Well, several. So, of course, they're in-ear, and they have varying tip sizes. They also have a little hook that you can hook around the back of your ear. But the best way and the highest advertised way for using these headphones is with these little secure fit ear cushions that they have. And they're included in three different sizes. And what they do is you attach them to the earbuds and you kind of tuck them into your ear. And so you press the earbud into your ear as you normally would, but then the cushion sort of provides a little bit of resistance to keep the earbud in your ear. So it presses against it, and it's rubber and kind of honeycomb design, so it conforms really well to your ears, and it just stays in there really well. Now, there is a little bit of a trick to getting them in, and there's the best way to figure it out, there's the package on the back of the package. It shows you how to actually insert the little secure fit cushion in there. And you'll want to play around with the different sizes of ear tips and the different sizes of the cushions. But once you get it figured out, it doesn't take too long to figure it out. But once you do, man, it just works really well. And it has like 6 hours of battery life. And I think the most important thing about it is the sound quality is really great. These are only $100 and it sounds phenomenal, you know, for something that you're going to be using for exercising. And I use them a lot of times for just wandering around the house and doing stuff. If I just want to listen to some headphones, because it's just nicer to listen with wireless. They also do a really nice thing with the sound, where they bring up the bass a little bit more. They have the mids down at a really comfy level, and then they take the very highest of the high end of the spectrum and bring it down so that you can turn up the volume pretty substantially and not make your ears hurt. So they just sound really good. They also they're sweat proof, they say, so it's good for exercising. Of course, they have that in mind. There are volume buttons, up, down. The only thing I really don't like about it too much is the fact that in order to change tracks, you have to press and hold on the volume buttons. There aren't independent track forward and back buttons, but the volume buttons do work for that. So you just press and hold for a few seconds and then it works. There's also a microphone in there, so you can take calls. Microphone's not that great, right, Adam?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've been on the on the receiving side of that. It's a little soft.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I mean, there and honestly, the biggest test for me is going to be doing like that guy in the commercial in the Siri ad did, where he says, you know, do a couple things and then play my running mix. It'll be interesting to see if that works. I hope it does, but it does have the microphone and it does work to some extent, but primarily they're headphones for listening to music, and they do a fantastic job with that. Honestly, I don't want to take a call when I'm out running because that's just crazy. So yeah, check it out. Jaybird Freedom Bluetooth headphones. They're $100 and I very much enjoy them. So with that, you can find all of our iPhone picks as well as the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. It'd be great if you reviewed the show in iTunes or just left a rating. You can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Of course, we'd like to thank our wonderful sponsor, Gazelle, at gazelle.com. Check them out if you want to sell some of your electronics, GPS, cameras, iPhones, all that stuff, gazelle.com. Our advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, which is macobserver.com. He's also on Twitter. At Jay Gamet is his Twitter name. He also has a Zazzle store, zazzle.com/Jay Gamet, which is where you can find his wonderful drawings on various things, hats, shirts, beer mugs. You can get the wonderful We Have Communicators coffee mug there as well, as zazzle.com/Jay Gamet. Thanks for being here as usual, Mr. Jeff.
And thanks for having me on as usual. It's always a party.
Yeah. Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, MattCast.com. He's at MattCast on Twitter. And you can find the member version of the MattCast at member.mattcast.com.
Yep. Yep. And I just put out my follow up to the Why I Am an Apple User episodes with all the feedback and stories from people in the MattCast community. So that's a really interesting episode if people want to hear that. And I'm going to be the keynote that Jeff and I did at MCE. I recorded that. Not positive on the sound quality. We had some mic issues, and I did unfortunately lose the Q&A, but I have the actual keynote part. So that'll probably be going out as just a separate little special episode on the regular MattCast feed, so people can go check out those two things.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Michael Johnston, as well as at Lil Reviews. That's where I review various things. So check that out. And I guess with that, we will see you next time on We Have Communicators.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. Because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.